With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome. It's Steve Bloomers Washing, the Independent Derby County podcast. The Rams are a few games closer to survival, but none of us are getting carried away. And joining me, Chris Parsons, to look back on Derby's last three performances are eternal realists Richard Kutcher. You told me before that you haven't drank for a month. Incredible stuff. How are you?
Yeah, very stone cold sober, Chris. So, I'm quite pleased with that over a month. I think the longest I've been since I was 17, at least since we've been doing this pod, I think. So, yeah, all well, very fit and healthy and sleeping very well indeed.
Absolutely remarkable. And Tom Martin, oi oi, how you doing?
Very good. I'm drinking Kutcher's share of the ale, so you can tell that he's moved out of my house for sure.
That's good to hear. Good fortnight, fellas. 2 weeks have passed, but I don't really feel like that much has changed for us as Derby fans or as people. Lockdown's still nowhere near being over, really. We're essentially still stuck in a relegation scrap despite recent results. I have moved house, actually, so there is that. But yeah. How are you both feeling about our chances of avoiding relegation after recent results?
Yeah, I think you're right, Chris. Not a lot has changed because I think when we last spoke, it was before the Rotherham game, which obviously was a low point in the season, losing 3-0 away to that postponed Rotherham fixture. But before that, I thought, you know, we had turned a corner to some degree. We'd started winning a few games. We weren't particularly convincing, but we were winning the battle. We know this team is limited, and we saw that again tonight, which we'll come on to. But they can be hard to beat. And they can put a shift in, which, to be honest, looking at the teams around us and the teams below us particularly, is probably going to be enough for this Derby team. But I expect more of the same for the rest of the season, to be honest.
Yeah, I've been enjoying the North Downs during lockdown, lots of walks and in and around the Kent countryside, which has been very pleasant. And I also celebrate my birthday on Tuesday, so happy birthday to me. I'm expecting lots of presents from our listeners.
Tom, I'll happily say to you now, I will buy you a pint for your birthday when the pubs reopen. How does that sound? Sometime in 2024. So this pod is being put together just minutes after Derby's 2-1 defeat at Vicarage Road to Watford, leaving them 17th in the Championship at the time of recording, at least, with a game in hand, and all the teams below us due to play this weekend, so still very much liable to change. We're still far from safe, clearly, but survival is still undoubtedly in our hands, as it always has been, to be fair. So what's new since we last spoke to you about Derby County? Well, Kazim has laid down his mark of goal of the season with that rasper against Borough. We nicked a crucial 3 points last week at Adams Park, thanks to an injury time winner from, checking my notes, Andre Wisdom, it says here. And we'll have a chat about all of those key moments, as well as a word on a certain Richard Keogh from the Huddersfield camp ahead of the Terriers visit next week. And of course, your standard quiz nonsense towards the end as well. But don't forget, Steve Bloomers Washing is partnered for the season with Derby Brewing Company, Derby's original craft brewer. So do check those guys out if you can. Watford then, Kutch. A game, I mean, it's interesting that our results are at least now going in the way they should do. We are at least now losing to teams that we probably should do at the top of the league and beating teams in and around us. Whereas for about the past 2 months, we've beaten teams towards the top of the division and failed to beat teams around us who we should have done. Watford were clearly a very good side. It was just a game too far, I would say, against a promotion-chasing team with plenty of Premier League quality. Sky told us that they've now picked up more points at home than any other team in the league this season. I think it's about 38, which is more points than Derby have in total. But a seventh away league defeat of the season, but only a fifth defeat in 17 league games under Rooney's management, either as sole manager or interim manager with Rossini and co. Cutch, at half time, it looked like damage limitation, didn't it? So looking at it with the glass half full perspective, I think you'd have to say it's credit to Derby's newfound confidence and resilience that we didn't crumble, and we ran a very solid Watford side pretty close on their own patch in the last few minutes.
Yeah, it's a really, really strange game, actually, I thought. But, you know, when those two goals go in very, very quick succession. And yeah, there were a couple of small errors, I think, in those goals. A little bit of fortune as well for Watford, but there was some quality as well. The pace from Saar, the finish from one Will Hughes as well. But when those two goals went in quick succession, you did fear the worst. And Watford were a cut above when it came to the quality in the final third and building up the play and creating chances and keeping the ball. Derby couldn't really keep hold of the ball in the Watford half at all in that first half. But, you know, just towards the end of that first half, I thought we started to get a small foothold. Obviously, the disallowed goal, which was an absolute travesty because Andre Wissam did absolutely nothing wrong. It was textbook example of a goalkeeper buying a free kick after making a hash of the corner previously. I just got the feeling that if we could be a bit more direct in the second half and get balls into the box, we really would cause some trouble. And that's exactly what happened. But you look at the statistics, we had zero shots on target. We actually had 10 corners to Watford's 3, which is strange considering we had zero shots on target. And that was where we looked most dangerous, was from balls into the box. And you're right, the kind of the fight and the battle and the determination and some of the basics are just being done to a level now, which means Derby are staying in games. You know, Rotherham aside, we're staying in games and competing. And if we had nicked a point right at the end, I don't think it would have been a complete injustice on Watford if we had clawed our way back into that.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with too much you've said there, Kutch. I think a point would have been a fair result. I think Derby battled without really creating too much. But then again, apart from a mad 3 minutes in the middle of the first half, nor did Watford. I don't remember Marshall having a big touch or a big save to make in the game. And in fact, the touch map, I think, at the end of the first half showed Kazim Richards having the fewest touches with 4. Martin Raghorn with 9 and David Marshall between them with 5 in the first half after 43 minutes. So it shows how little we were actually under pressure, and then how unfortunate we were, certainly with the first goal, and how frustratingly poor some of the defending was for the second goal. I don't think Edmondson got out quick enough, and that played them all onside and allowed Watford to recycle the ball. So Derby would have deserved a point, I think, tonight, and we can hold our heads high and move on to hopefully an easier fixture. And if we play like that on Tuesday against Huddersfield, then we should get at least a point.
Tom, I mean, there are moments when you play teams in the Championship who've just been relegated from the Premier League, when it's easy to forget that a lot of them do still have Premier League quality. And Watford's first goal in the game we just watched was a prime example of that, with what Ismail Assar did to Lee Buchanan, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous pace from, I was just saying to Tom before we started, that it looked like Buchanan had him covered, actually. And then over the space of 2, maybe 3 yards, Saar gains a yard on Buchanan and puts the ball across. It was incredible pace from Saar. You very rarely see that difference over just a few yards. And then, you know, Andre Wisdom's quite unlucky. He goes to clear the ball. It's hard enough for David Marshall, when the ball's been played across the goal, cut back like that, to spin and get across the goal anyway. When it then goes off a deflection after your defender's kind of semi-cleared it, it's even harder. So I was impressed that Marshall even got close to it. I don't think he had a chance. So it was unfortunate. And then I think there was a lapse of concentration, as Edmund said, regarding that second goal.
Yeah, I think I don't think anyone can blame Marshall. I've seen a couple of bits on Twitter where Marshall's been blamed for that first goal. I mean, Wisdom clears the ball against João Pedro's trailing leg. It's not even into his body. So João Pedro has no idea where that ball is going, and it flies into the middle of the goal, and Marshall's like completely beaten. And I say, the fact he almost gets a hand to it to keep it claw it back out is pretty impressive. So, but yes, Saar's pace all night was really dangerous. And I thought Buchanan actually had a pretty decent game trying to keep a handle on him. You're dealing with a really high quality player, and Buchanan's been praised by Rooney for how well he's been playing and how well he's been training. And he's mentioned that England and stuff like that, which is a long, long way away for him. But you can see that he's going to be capable of dealing with high quality players who are having a good night. And that's exactly what Saar had. And Buchanan didn't look out of place there against a really top quality player. For the second goal, just really disappointing, like to see that the Derby backline pushed up and Edmondson was 5 or 6 yards behind them. If he'd have been in line, the players that receive the ball when it comes back in, I think it's Cleverley that receives it who lays the flick off for Will Hughes. Cleverley would have been 2 or 3 yards offside. So it's just poor play. And for me, Edmondson doesn't look like a real quality championship centre half. He looks a little bit behind the pace, but he'll do as a stopgap for now. But a bit disappointed with him tonight.
I mean, he had glimpses. I think he's clearly got the some physical attributes, like putting a couple of decent headers. He looks to like he wants to spread the ball around. Like he looks like he wants to distribute it out to the fullbacks, which is encouraging. And he looks like he wants to break through the lines and push forward and move upfield, which is something. But yeah, so you mean? But maybe, if you have to give him a bit of credit, or maybe that is just because lack of game time. Like he'd only played a handful of games for Rangers before he came to us. Like, do you think it's sort of rustiness with Edmondson, or do you stand by the fact that you're just not quite sure he's got the quality in the first place?
Yeah, I think, okay, so he has got a bit of rustiness. He played 7 games for Rangers before he joined us, and then he's thrust into it because of an injury to Clark. So there is rustiness, does play an element to it, but equally, I stand by my comments. I mean, I want to spray the ball around the park when I play football, Chris, and I can't do it because I'm not good enough. So, yeah, fine. He's in there and he's doing a job, but long term, no, he's not for me. He gives the ball away way too easily. The amount of times that he went to play the ball down the line and it was aimlessly pumped forward. The amount of times that he received the ball and then looked backwards and didn't know what he was doing. He did find himself in the left wing position in the last sort of few minutes with Buchanan. And there's a frustrating sort of element where you could see Buchanan passing the ball to him and then holding to wait for the time to run. And then he gave the ball straight back to him. It's like, just hold on to the ball for 2 seconds and allow Buchanan to make the run and slip him in. And then Buchanan did make the run and he didn't slip him in at all. He tried to put a cross into the box, which actually ended up on Uzviak's foot. And it didn't sort of come to anything apart from a corner in the end. But I'm not necessarily blaming him for that left wing play, but I just think as a centre half, I thought he looks off the pace, and I didn't think he looked great in the second half against Wickham. I thought he was found out and perhaps fortunate not to concede a penalty for a clumsy looking tackle. I think he did win the ball, but it didn't look clean at all. And I don't think he's at the same level as Matt Clark and Andre Wisdom. So yeah, I will stand by my comments.
Disappointingly then, Derby could and should have been back in the game at half-time. I'm happy to announce that Derby are now an absolute menace from corners. That's a nice little change. And when Colin Kazan-Richards bundled in that header, Kutch, could you see anything on first glance to suggest what we did wrong there, that meant it should have been disallowed? I mean, you touched on it before. It looks like Andre Wisdom is just A, facing away from the goalkeeper, B, not really moving, and see the keeper makes a hash of it, having fluffed a corner before. Like, it just seemed the ref completely bottled that one.
Yeah, unless suddenly you're not allowed to stand in the 6 yard box within 2 or 3 yards of the goalkeeper. I don't know what else Andre Wisdom could have done not to concede a free kick there. The goalkeeper jumps into him. It's plain and simple. The goalkeeper jumps into him. I think that's all there is to it. I mean, I think a great run from Kazim Richards. He loses his man from the set piece. Another great ball into the box as well from a corner, which is really great to see. God knows how many times we've seen Derby take awful corners. We look a threat every time. And I don't know what the referee's saying. I saw someone, it was a Loftus, a QPR account, I think, retweeted by 11 points, one win on Twitter, saying that, is it Drysdale, the referee, or something like that? He said that he always gives free kicks in favour of the goalkeeper, and teams should know that by now and not even risk giving him away, which if that's true, and this guy studied the referees every performance, and that's an interesting way to live your life. But I don't know why that's a trend for a referee, but it wasn't a foul. It should have been a goal, and it could have been a different game if he'd gone in at 2-1.
a real pivotal moment in the game, and it was Tim Robinson, the referee, who gave the free kick. And actually, Tom Cleverley lived up to his name, unlike a certain politician by the name of James Cleverley. And he cleverly annihilates the referee in the previous corner for not giving a foul against himself and Will Hughes and the goalkeeper, who jumps out and I think punches himself in the face and ends up flat on his back. And they tried everything to make it look like it was a free kick. In the first instance, it wasn't. Derby win the second corner. As soon as the ball came into the box, the referee was blowing for a foul. It was very much reminiscent of Stuart Atwell in less controversial circumstances this time, not giving the goal against Forest because he was so eager to put the whistle into his mouth and to try and ease the pressure on himself. A poor, poor decision. And I thought the referee was a bit poor for both sides. He gave free kicks when he didn't need to and didn't allow the advantage to go for Watford a couple of times. And for Derby, obviously made a couple of mistakes and a few bookings for a few players because of the reactions of Watford players rather than because of what actually happened in front of him. So disappointing. For me, it wasn't a foul. Goalkeepers union, even membership, I think, would be handing that back to Backman for this shocking attempt to try and punch the ball away from a corner.
Yeah, you talk about game management, don't you? And maybe, I don't know, I can only speculate, but maybe Watford looked out at that. Maybe they looked at the fact that we really target corners as a way of scoring now. And maybe they just sort of said, look, we need to do whatever it takes to get the ref to blow up on these corners to make him blow in our favour. I don't know. It's just one way of looking at it. But yeah, since we last spoke, Derby are now fielding a very much a refreshed team. There is Edmondson at the back who played the whole game, of course, after signing from Rangers on loan, and Patrick Roberts, who has signed on loan as well. Lee Gregory in the mix too. What have you made of the new faces, the new additions? I think Patrick Roberts is the one that maybe frustrated me a bit tonight, because we saw in glimpses against Wickham that he's got a great touch. He can like drift between challenges. He can come inside, like pick little pockets and sort of look to get into positions where he can thread in the striker or shoot from the edge of the area or like find an overlapping wing back or fullback. But tonight his game was almost a little bit too predictable. Like you want to see the wide man in that three, like get to the byline, get crosses in, find Kazim Richards, give the centre back something to think about, like give them something to defend. And it's unfortunate that he didn't really do that against Watford, did he, Kutch?
No, he didn't. It was disappointing because he did have an impact against Wickham. And yeah, there's a difference in quality of opposition there, of course, which might explain some of that. But also I thought that because of the threat that Watford presented going forward, you know, the threat on the wings that they have, I think that also stopped our fullbacks from getting forward quite as eagerly. And I think Patrick Roberts really does need an overlapping right back. And Byrne does do that a lot, and he did do it more in the second half. But in that first half particularly, Roberts just, he couldn't really hold on to the ball. He wasn't getting the ball in. As he said, he'd go down a cul-de-sac and lose it. It was the opposite of his display when he came off the bench against Wickham, when we were on the front foot a lot more. And I think he's the kind of player that is going to benefit when we're dominating the ball more and we're on the front foot. Look, as we were talking about earlier tonight, Derby's got a long history, a recent history of wingers with frustrating end product. And look, let's not write anyone off or call them the messiah after 1.5 games, but it wasn't a great performance from Patrick Roberts tonight. There is obviously a really skillful player there. We just need to get him on the ball in the right positions, and he needs to make some better decisions when he's in those positions.
Tom, the Kutch mentioned the Wickham game there, of course, famously settled by Andre Wisdom's first ever league goal for Derby. I think when we look back on this season in a couple of years, and we look back on how we experience games together, and we are hopefully doing a little bit for Rampage, the club magazine, about what games have been like in lockdown. But when we look back on it a couple of years, I think we'll look back on that game, won't we, as one of the big moments that we enjoyed together on Zoom. It was just really weird because Kutch had it and he was screen sharing it with us. So when the goal went in, there was like a sort of conga line of celebration. Like Kutch celebrated first, and a second later I celebrated, And then because your Wi-Fi is appalling, then you celebrated about 3 seconds after that. It was just a surreal moment, wasn't it?
It was a bit like being at the actual game. Normally it's me celebrating first because I think everything's going in. And then it's you celebrating, Chris, because you actually are a realist and only wait until the ball's hit the back of the net. And then Kutch is normally not looking, or he's looking at some girl over the other side. And then he celebrates.
Some girl. Scandalous, but I'll give it.
But yeah, it was. I mean, the thing that I thought about the Wickham game was the fact that what absolute limbs that would have been in the away end in the 93rd minute, having travelled down there to score so late, sort of been thinking, oh, I need to get the last train back or something like that, and it's a half hour walk back to the station. Do I go early or do I not? And then like sticking around for that, and Waghorn's free kick hitting the post, and Wisdom burying it, like fantastic. That would have been great.
You love an early exit from a game, Tom. I'm willing to say that right now. So I think there's a fair chance you would have missed that goal because you love an early exit from a game and you hate missing trains home.
I'm going to dispute that strongly because I think there's only ever been three games I've left early. I don't
Brighton
mind
away.
Brighton away because we were 3-0 down and I was with my mate and went to watch the rugby. Northampton Town against Barnet in 1994 and I don't remember the third one. Half time, I'll give you that, Chris. I'll give you it.
Villa away under Lampard. Didn't you want to go home at half time and get a train back from Birmingham to London quarter past four?
Yeah, because we couldn't string two passes together. We were 4-0 down. Like, why do I want to pay? What's that? I'd have gone to the pub and sat in the pub.
I almost got in a fight with Derby fans in the stairwell at half time in that match. Bloody hell, it was horrendous.
I was still there in the 93rd minute, though, Chris. I wanted to go home, and I wanted to go to the pub, and you wouldn't let me. So I
only because I guilt tripped you to stay because you had my train ticket and I didn't want you to leave. But anyway, that's a different story. Yeah, it's great, wasn't it? And you're completely right. It would have been absolutely biblical in that away end, which I definitely would have been there for. But overall, Kutch, it was probably one of the worst games of football I've seen this season, if not in the last 10 years of my life, I think. It was an absolute shocker, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't great. I mean, I can think of... There's been lots of rubbish games this season, boys. Like, it's easy to always say the last one was the worst or the last one was the best. There was a lot of shockers this season. At least we won that one. And, you know, we all knew what it was going to be when we went into it. You saw the land of the Giants, which Rain really picked as the back four, you know, dropping Buchanan and Byrne or resting them or rotating them out, however you want to say it. But, you know, we got the job done. And as we said before, we haven't got the job done. Those are the games we have been dropping points in the last couple of months against teams around us, against the Rotherhams and Barnsleys, etc. So, look, we needed to get... if we'd lost to Wickham, we would have been dragged right back into it again. And we're not out of it, but it would have been horrendous if we'd lost to Wickham, particularly after losing to Rotherham just a couple of games before. So we battled, we got the win. I know that it was a bit of a shithouse and you could say we're lucky to get the win. That's probably true. But Colin Kazir-Richards did miss an absolute sitter of a header just a few minutes before. And we were getting in and around their box more in that last 10 minutes. So while, as Antoine and I discussed on the verdict straight afterwards, we were fortunate not to have conceded a goal before we got our first goal. And they could have had another penalty as well. I did think Derby were towing a screw in that last 10 minutes. And look, we battled, we got towards the end and the quality showed tonight, just like the quality showed for Watford tonight.
Just before we move on to the second half of the pod, in case you missed it on Twitter, we're up for an award, lads, again, for the second year in a row, chaps. We're up for Club Podcast of the Year at the FSA Awards, the Football Supporters Association. We're up last year, but we lost to Fulham, as usual. But we're up for it again. We are up for the award in that category. We're up against podcasts from, off the top of my head, Charlton, Wickham, Man City, and Leeds, and Norwich. The reason I'm mentioning this is A, to show off, obviously, but B, we need your vote. It's a public vote this year. Normally, it's a panel of judges, but this year, it is simply public vote. And let's be honest, there's at least two clubs in that category who are a bit bigger than us. So we need every vote that we can get to try and bring home the bacon on that one. So if you enjoy the podcast, if you like Steve Bloomer's washing, then give us a vote, will you? Do us a favour. You can do it by heading over to the FSA website. It's thefsa.org.uk/news. That's thefsa.org.uk/news, and then scroll down on that page and you'll see a little article where you can find the nomination form. And in that, you can select Steve Bloomer's Washing in Club Podcast of the Year.
Hi, I'm Dean Sturridge.
Hi, I'm Paul Pesky-Solido.
Hi, I'm Curtis Davis, and you're listening to Steve Bloomer's Washing.
This time he slipped it into Pearson. Pearson goes for the early ball. Dickhoff can keep it in here. Cut back for Hulse! Great goal! What a finish from Hulse, and Derby lead!
All right then, well, yeah, it was defeat against Watford then, but before that, back-to-back victories again after those three victories in a row. Before that, which made it 5-6, and which briefly made Derby the form team in the Championship, which we probably won't be after this weekend. But that 2-1 victory over Middlesbrough came, lads, with a goal that I'm probably going to say was comfortably the best we've scored this season. Granted, the bar is pretty low because we haven't scored very many goals at all, and the ones we have scored haven't been very good. But yeah, CKR, I'm going to say it, I had him down as a bit of a tapping merchant. I've got to be honest, I don't think he'd scored many goals from further out than about 3 yards. But when he gets that layoff, one touch out his feet, and then bang, four goalkeepers wouldn't have saved that, Richard Kutcher.
four goalkeepers of me and Tom wouldn't have saved that, though. it was a ridiculous strike. He hit it so hard. It was one of those, I think I've said a few times, when I watch it on Rams TV, it's always quite a bit behind. And I think my BBC Sport alert had come through before, but I always don't look at it. So I don't see who scored, or as in which team has scored. The ball was right down the other end of the pitch, in the Borough end. When the build-up was really good, it's actually a really good team goal even before Kazim Richards absolutely smashed it in. And you don't get many. It was only a few weeks ago, Chris, wasn't it, that you were tweeting a compilation of goals off the underside of the bar, and that one goes right to the top.
Definitely, that's flying right in. Tom, what do you make of it? Goal of the season so far?
Oh, it's an absolute thunder bastard. What a strike that was. Nice little touch on Gregory and actually thwacked into the back of the net. So, yeah, 4, 5, 6 goalkeepers, if that was possible, wouldn't have saved that one. Great strike. And as you say, Chris, I had him down as a tap-in kind of guy. But brilliant goal.
Fantastic stuff. Well, on Tuesday then, on to the next one, and it's going to be Huddersfield at home, who, of course, turned us over 1-0 at their place earlier in the season, very early in the season, actually. But the tables have definitely turned since then, it's fair to say. Derby in decent form, despite losing to Watford, whereas Town are just sinking like an absolute stone. Only 2 points in 2021 from 8 games. Now definitely, definitely looking over their shoulder, despite the arrivals of that certain Richard Keogh and more recently Dwayne Holmes. To have a bit of chat about that game and those two players in particular, we had a chat to Dan from the Huddersfield Town podcast, and he takes that chance. And here's what Dan told us ahead of the game next week. Dan, thanks for giving us your time. I'll start by asking you the question that we get asked a lot on our podcast, the title of yours, and who takes that chance. I'm aware of the origin myself because I was actually at the game in question myself in person. We were talking about this before, but can you just fill our listeners in on the meaning of that one?
Yeah, it's basically the commentary from the playoff final, from when Schindler slotted home the winning penalty. I think the full version is Christopher Schindler has the chance to write his name in Huddersfield Town folklore, and obviously runs up and strikes and it goes in, and you know, commentator Andy takes that chance. So that's where it came from originally.
Got it. How many times have you watched that playoff shootout, would you say?
Oh, too many to mention. It's one of those go-to things, you know, when you it's like supporting a football team, you have those moments where you're up and when you're down, and in down moments it's nice to look back and watch something like that and realise it's not all as doom and gloom as it might be in, you know, present.
That's it. Go to your happy place. Well, it's funny you mentioned it. So in terms of the here and now, those were happier times for Huddersfield, of course. But right now, the form table does make quite grim reading for the Terriers. Just 2 points from 8 games since the start of the year. How concerned are our Town fans right now?
It depends, really. It depends on who you speak to. There's quite a big split at the moment. There's teams that think, fans that think we'll be all right still and don't seem too concerned. And then there's fans that are already resigned to relegation. It's a funny one because we obviously brought in a new manager right at the start of the season. Carlos Corberan has come in from Leeds United, and we had a decent start. We did predictions on our podcast, as I'm sure you guys do at the start of the season, as to where you think we'd finish. And, you know, the general consensus was with the squad at the time, you know, we'd be lucky to stay up. I think myself, I actually predict us to get relegated. Corberan came in and got off to a fairly decent start and had us mid-table. We had a little bit of a slump towards back end at year, but we were always picking up the odd win. We were looking at maybe 4 points out of every three games, which, you know, is a steady mid-table form, really. And I think most people were happy with that, given the what's happened over the past couple of years and change of ownership in the club. We just needed a season to stabilise. But since Christmas, and ironically, since he got a contract extension, we extended his contract on Christmas Eve up to the end of the 23-24 season. And since then, like you say, just picked up 2 points and lost to Plymouth 3-2 in FA Cup at home. So since that new contract's come in, he's not done so great, which is a shame, really.
I mean, looking at the at Huddersfield's recent results, Dan, from a neutral's point of view, it does seem like you are dropping quite a few points from winning positions recently. You were 2-0 up against Wickham and lost 1-0 up against Borough recently and lost. I mean, we all know that Corberan was Bielsa's assistant, and we all know how Bielsa likes to set up his teams to be intense at the start. I just wonder if, and this is whether this is something Town fans have talked about, if there's maybe a bit of post-Christmas burnout creeping in, do you think?
Potentially, although a common theme for Huddersfield Town this season is losing or dropping points from winning positions. I think overall we've dropped 23 points throughout the season from being in front. So it's not particular something that's just crept in on this bad run of form. It is something that's been, you know, throughout the season. I think, like you say, it's a style very similar to what Bielsa played at Leeds. It's very gung-ho, like, you know, just basically attack, attack, attack. Or certainly what in the early stages of the season. We have been unfortunate with injuries. We've had key players on sidelines for lengthy spells. Josh Caroma, as top scorer, has been out a while now. We were hoping that he'd be back, but he's had another injury setback. Danny Ward, who were brought in over the summer to play up front, he's rarely featured. I think he's completed 90 minutes once this season. We've had constant changes in defence, which led us to bring on, you know, Richard Keogh in, which I'm sure we'll, you know, move on to talk about. So he has had some obstacles in his way, shall we say, Carlos, in regards to keeping a settled side. But I think that one of the major concerns that's sort of creeping through now is his sort of game management. And the way that once we do go in front, the way that he sort of conducts the rest of the game, just don't seem to be able to adjust his style to see games out. Wickham, a prime example of that last week, you know, 2-0 up at home against the team bottom of the league, not won away in 8, lost the last 5, barely scoring, and we end up losing 3-2. You know, it's just a perfect example of not being able to see the game out. And like I say, it's unfortunate because his early season form, you know, fans kind of put up with that because we were winning. We were playing nice football. Now we're throwing it away. We're not winning as much, and the football seems to have, you know, died off in quality as well. So I won't say the net's closing in on him, but there's certainly a lot more questions being raised than what there might have been, you know, back into 2020.
And you mentioned him just then, of course. We have to talk about two of Huddersfield's most recent signings. Richard Keogh coming in, having previously spent 8 years at Derby County, and Dwayne Holmes returning. Keogh first, what sort of first impression has he made on Town fans?
First impressions, I think, well, before we even signed him, because he played for us previously, I think a lot of fans instantly go back to that sort of memory. Although it were a long time ago, he never sort of pulled up any roots with us. He were hit and miss. So I think before I'd even got on the pitch, there were questions being asked. Obviously, given the history at Derby with the incident, which we, you know, I'm sure has been talked about millions of times, so we won't rake over that. But Me personally, I thought it was one of those standings that, although one of those signings, sorry, that although it didn't wow me, it were understandable. We were struggling for centre halves again due to injuries that we've had, and the next sort of centre halves available were really young lads. So I think we brought Keogh in to show that bit of experience to help Naby Sarr, who was very hit and miss, you know, to sort of shore up the defence. And again, ironically, he's had no effect whatsoever. I was just looking before he came on. He's played six since he came in. We've played six. We've won zero. We've drawn two, lost four, and conceded 10 goals. So, you know, the reasons why he were brought in, it don't seem to have had any effect, really. Overall, I don't think he's played bad. You know, there's been a couple of obvious errors. He made a shocking pass against Stoke, which led to a goal for Stoke, which got them right back into the game. But yeah, it just doesn't seem to have gone as planned, whether or not that's due to other factors rather than Keogh himself. He's obviously an experienced Championship defender. You know, he's played many, many times for Derby, as you say. And generally, looking back as well, when you were, you know, top 10 side throughout his stint at Derby, I'd say. So it's not like he's been in a struggling side. I just don't think he's had a bigger impact as what we were hoping, really.
I guess part of that is like you say, we can't really attribute that all to him, that, you know, he's... there's got to be a collective responsibility there. But Dwayne Holmes is a more familiar face, of course, to Town fans, having come through the Huddersfield Academy and spent 3 years there between 2013 and 2016. Has he slotted straight into the first 11?
Yeah, again, injury ravaged side. He came and he slotted straight in. Again, a bit of a funny signing. He was apparently looked at in the summer, either last summer or we were going to bring him in, you know, look to bring him in this summer, and we managed to get him early. Again, on paper, it looks a reasonable signing. It not really wowed me. I think when you sign an old player and they've not in the first thing with you, you know, if he's an absolute legend and scored you, you know, hundreds of goals and stuff, when they come back, everybody's buzzing. But players like Dwayne Holmes, he were always a bit of a fringe player at the time. Granted, he was very, very young when he played for us in his first stint. He looked all right when he came on, scored a few goals. Seems to be brought in to fill a winger slot. I seem to remember him almost being like a sort of a number 10. I know everybody plays different formations now to what they did back then, but, you know, collecting that ball on half turn, central, and driving at players, which is something that we were lacking. So, yeah, I could understand why we brought him in. Again, he's not had that much impact, but, you know, when we're on a run of form like we are on, nobody's having any impact again. So it's not something that, you know, can be directly linked towards Holmes coming in. I think we're just poor overall at the moment, and anybody coming into that side, you could put Lionel Messi and Ronaldo on either wing in that side at the moment, and I think we'd still struggle. You know, it's just one of them things.
On to Tuesday then. On paper, it's when Derby play Town, it's a team in very good form against a team in very bad form, although we are speaking to you guys before Town's home game against Swansea, so all that could change. But in terms of Town's starting 11, who do Huddersfield need big performances from to get something from the game against Derby?
I feel everybody, really. Obviously, you mentioned Swansea game. You know, looking at that on paper, I can't see the fourth, you know, foul farm table being turned upside down in that one. But, you know, football's football, innit, and you never know. But looking at Derby, we're struggling in defence. That's the main problem. If you'd have asked us, you know, fan base just before Christmas where we were struggling, pretty much everybody were crying out for a striker to be brought in during January. You know, we create a lot of chances, but we don't score any. Problem is at the back for me, though. We just concede so many goals. I think there's only Wickham in league that's conceded. I'm a little bit old school. My ethos would now be to stop conceding goals before trying to score them. Unfortunately, I think Carlos and the style he plays is, let's try to score more than we concede, which is obviously not working. So I think for me, back five, you know, we've got Schofield in there. He's a young keeper. He's only played half a season at best. Aristofalo's out through suspension, I believe, still for Derby. So we're a left back down. We've had a young lad, Jaden Brown, who unfortunately got a concussion, so he had to miss a couple of games due to that. So he will probably be back and playing. Again, not played much football. Naby Sarr-Keogh as centre halves, and then Pippa as right back. I think it's them five really that need to just show things up, play simple. Rose edit if you need be, and just try get some A point on board, and an away point in Championship is never a bad result, really, no matter where you are in league.
Right then, lads, that is the Huddersfield take on it then. Dan, not particularly sounding that optimistic ahead of the game on Tuesday. But if, here's a hypothetical for you, if you were in the ground for this game, Derby v Huddersfield at Pride Park, fans were allowed in, and you saw Richard Keogh stride out of the Pride Park tunnel, do that thing he always does where he does a pretend header before he jumps on the pitch. What sort of reception would you give him, Kutch? And how do you think he would have been received by Derby fans if they were in the ground for that game?
I certainly wouldn't boo him. I feel like I reserve booing of players for people who have done something pretty badly wrong. You can justify. Likewise, I wouldn't boo Dwayne Holmes. I wouldn't particularly applaud him, because I think the way he left the club wasn't great. But I wouldn't boo him. With Richard Keogh, I probably would give him a clap. I wouldn't give him a loud cheer. I'd probably give him a little kind of little clap like this. Because, over 300 games in Derby County, part captain of, one of our best teams, our best team of the last 10 years or so. Obviously, the way he left the club wasn't ideal, and obviously his involvement in that incident wasn't ideal. But look, I think the good definitely outweighs the bad of Richard Keogh, so I would give him a respectful round of applause. And in terms of the stadium, I don't know. It's a really hard one to call, actually. I'd be interested to hear what you boys think, but I think it'll be mixed. I think there would be people that there'd be a few boo boys. I think it'll be a positive reception. I think the fact that we've been so poor for the last year now, and the club's in a mess, and maybe the sentiment towards Mel Morris isn't what it used to be, I think would probably help Richard Keogh's cause in that regard.
I would say, I reckon, I agree with you on Keogh. I think there would be some boos, but they'd be generally outweighed by a respectful ripple of applause, I would say. But I'm just not sure Holmes would get a good reception, which I think would be unfair.
But no, I don't think he would. Holmes wouldn't get... I wouldn't boo him, but I think he would get a lot of boos.
It would be... It's more recent. And yeah, the way he left and the way that he basically openly admitted that he was sort of going for a move since, he has been going for a move for a few months. Fans remember that stuff. And they remember that he wasn't really in great form for the last few months of his career. Yeah, he had... He had his detractors, and he had people who gave him stick online, which wasn't deserved. But yeah, Tom, I reckon, for whatever reason, I'm not sure Holmes would have got the best reception if fans were in the ground for that game.
I can see that, because his comments, whether taken out of context or whatever, the way they were reported by the media, they left a bit of a sour taste. Like myself, you and Kutch and my brother, Anton, all had like a lot of time for Holmes, thought he was a good player. But I do think that left a sour taste. So I think he would have got a bit of a frosty reception. I agree with you with Keogh. I could see it being a mixture of like boos and a bit of a applause there, like a bit of a pantomime villain. But when the 60th minute comes around and Derby are 2-0 up, and I could see the South Stand going, Keogh, 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 as he heads the ball out of play for another Derby corner from which we score a third. So yeah, it would have been a nice mix there. But I think overall the sentiments are pretty nice towards him.
Yeah, fair enough. I can't really say much fairer than that. So as the table stands at the moment, clearly it's going to change a lot over the weekend. We're recording late on the Friday night, but Derby currently 17th, 34 from 30. Then 18th is Forest, 33 from 30. 19th is Huddersfield, 33 from 30. Then Coventry, 31 from 30. Then Rotherham, 29 from 28. So two games in hand. Then in the bottom three is Wednesday, 28 from 29, Birmingham, 28 from 30, and Wickham, who are surely gone, 19 from 29, 10 points from safety. Who's going That's a simple question. It's been a lot of ups and downs. I'd love to see one of those graphs that plots the respective positions mm-hmm. over the season of all those teams in the bottom eight, because it would just be mind-boggling. But who is going to be there at the end?
Well, yeah, as you say, Wickham must be gone. You know, Birmingham City are in there and already, you know, very much going in the wrong direction, lost their last three matches. The teams that are really going in the wrong direction are Huddersfield and Coventry. As you say, Huddersfield lost three of the last five, lost the last two. Coventry have lost three of the last five as well, lost the last two. Rotherham United have lost their last two matches, but they've won the two before that. And as you say, have the games in hand. I would fancy Rotherham to stay out of it. I think Birmingham will go. I think it might be between Huddersfield and Coventry. QPR have put some wins together. I think Derby and Forest obviously picking up enough points now. So my bet would be Wickham, Birmingham, and I'm gonna say Huddersfield, because I'd rather Huddersfield go down than Coventry. But I think it's between Huddersfield and Coventry for that last spot.
I would say ouch, but when we spoke to Dan, he actually predicted himself that they'd get relegated at the start of the season. So it's not that harsh, really. Tom, what do you reckon? Can you bet that? Any other dark horses to go down, do you think?
Yeah, I think Birmingham are in a really bad way at the moment, and they were poor against us a month and a half ago. And I think Karanka's on borrowed time. So it only depends as to whether they sack Karanka and someone comes in to save them. Because otherwise, for me, I think they're goners. I think Sheffield Wednesday have got enough to get out of it. I think, as you say, Cups, like Rotherham have enough to get out of it, despite myself just before Christmas saying Rotherham were the team that you wanted to play against because they were conceding goals left, right and centre. I think they shipped six against Coventry or Birmingham. It was definitely at St Andrews at some point before Christmas. So the third team, I don't want to call the third team. I think it's really tight. I don't have a gut feeling, so I'm going to go Huddersfield because they're in the worst form, but I think it's definitely going to change, and I wouldn't be surprised if I'm wrong with that one. I think Derby has still got a lot of work to do, but I think definitely Wickham, most likely Birmingham, and maybe Huddersfield.
Well, I think we've got, the problem is for Derby, you know, we're looking a bit better. Obviously, we've lost tonight, but we have been picking up points, obviously, was it 5 from 6 before tonight? But we have got Huddersfield and Nottingham Forest next, two teams that are around us. Now, if those results go badly, both of those results go badly, we're definitely deep back in it. And that's the same for all the teams. As Tom says, it can change so quickly. I do think we've got enough. But yeah, you know, I think we need to avoid losing to Huddersfield because that swaps around pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, 6 points from safety. If we just win one of those games against Forest or Town, then we're just an extra little bit closer, I think. But yeah, I'd have to say Wickham, probably Blues as well, because they just seem to be in free fall. And then, I don't know, it's really hard to call. I think Wednesday will sneak out of it, I reckon, because you've got to remember they should be where we are. They should be on 34 because they've got a points deduction. And so I think maybe Rotherham or Coventry, Huddersfield to stay up on goal difference on the final day when Richard Keogh powers home a diving header in the last minute to keep him up on goal difference.
It's going to go one of two ways with Keogh. He's either going to do that or he's going to score the own goal that puts him down.
Yeah, exactly. Either way, it'll be absolute box office stuff. Tom, let's wrap it up, shall we? That is probably enough waffling from us on this particular pod, but fancy a quiz? Can we? Should we get quizzical just for the last few minutes?
Yeah, I think it is about time to get quizzical. And I've got a Who Am I for us, which is a classic for all of our regular listeners. So the first clue is I was born on the 3rd of November, 1979.
Kutch. Mo Konyich.
Incorrect.
Chris. Marco Reich.
It's a good guess, but also incorrect. Second clue, I played 393 games during my career. And I scored 32 goals between 1996 and 2015.
Kutch. Seth Johnson. No, not 36 league goals. Bloody hell. Not that many games. Awful guess. Sorry.
Chris. Gary Teal.
Nope. Incorrect. Next one. I played for 7 clubs during my career, starting at Coventry City.
Kutch. Spencer Pryor.
It's a good guess. And I liked your Mo Konyich guess as well, because he was also at Coventry, but it's incorrect.
Chris. Stern John.
Oh. Didn't start his career at Coventry.
Yeah, 32 goals. No, unfortunately not, Chris. Now we're getting into maybe a little bit more easier territory. Some tough start. 3 of those league goals were for Derby County, but I scored 16 of those goals for tonight's opponent, Watford.
Catch. Tommy Smith?
Recently interviewed on Steve Bloomer's Washing, but unfortunately, not who am I?
Chris Danny Dicchio.
unfortunately not. I played 57 games for the Rams, 9 of which were during a loan spell in 2009.
Chris, John Eustace.
It is the big man, John Eustace.
Oh, well done. He's got 36 goals.
32 league goals between 1996 and 2015. 16 for his opponents.
The Eust. What a player. See it out. He was a guy who could see it out, wasn't he? We're going to see it out now, because that is the end of this pod. Just before we go, though, don't forget to subscribe to Steve Bloomer's Washing. If you enjoyed the pod, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or SoundCloud. Give us a follow on social while you're there as well for just my inane ramblings on Twitter, if nothing else, at Steve Bloomer Pod. And we're on Instagram and Facebook as well. But we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Kutch, until then, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Tom Martin, always a pleasure to hear from you as well.
All the best. Thank you very much.
Speak to you soon.